You're listening to Work Tape, episode 157.
Welcome to this edition of the Work Tape podcast. It's your boy, Money Mitchell, Isaac Grubin Grover.
How do you do, friends?
And we're going to be continuing our retrospective look at the biggest records of 1984. We did that in the previous episode, covered a lot of heavy hitters in that episode. I mean, just because 84 was a stacked year from, you know, Purple Rain to Diamond Life to 1984 by Van Halen. I mean, there were just huge, huge records going on at the time. And there was a lot of good R&B and the early emergence of hip hop too at this time. Run DMC put out the self-titled this year. It's Like That being their first really big notable single. Now, granted, this was still at the time where there was kind of the flow of I went down to the hat store and I bought myself a hat.
I feel like Donkey Kong totally ripped that off.
We're in the park, in the dark. There were sparks, you know, that type of, you know, almost spoken word type of thing. And it was still because at this time, I mean, there was still a lot of rap over, you know, these disco breaks and stuff. And so, but Run DMC was cool in the sense that they had a bit of that flow, but they had a bit more of a bite to it. I would say their delivery and charisma kind of set them apart from pretty much the rest of everybody else at that time.
Especially Beastie. I mean, actually, Run DMC featured on Curtis Blow's Ego Trip of the same year. So that's very interesting because Curtis does the whole, you know, rapping over the disco breaks.
Right, because the breaks, exactly, you know.
These are the breaks.
Clap your hands, everybody. You got what it takes? Yeah, that whole thing. But I mean, Run DMC, I think, even from the get-go with like Rockbox and like Sucker MCs, you know, really incorporated more of the rock elements too.
Dude, Sucker MCs is one of the terms of the decade.
Yes.
Sucker MCs.
Most definitely. So I think that's kind of what also set like Run DMC apart too. And of course, yeah, a huge influence on the Beastie Boys, a huge influence on a lot of just rap and rock to come. So definitely worth mentioning there. And of course, the Curtis record as well. This Kool & the Gang record is actually pretty significant with Fresh and Cherish. Cherish, I think, is actually one of the best like ballads of the 80s. Because funny enough, Kool & the Gang was mostly like an instrumental like jazz and folk band.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was after like Summer Madness that they decided to do some vocals on their songs. And then you had, of course, like Celebration and Get Down On It and countless others too.
You know, this was quite a fade out for the disco era, because I know we talked about that whole 79 thing. But like by this mid time, because Diana Ross also releases was Swept Away in this year.
Right.
And so you have Curtis Blow, Diana, Kool & the Gang. It's really fizzling out the disco sound. And we're going more, like you just mentioned, into ballads.
Yeah.
And it's funny how, like, by the mid-80s, you know, the funk bands, the disco bands, like, everyone's kind of moving to ballads, and then it's kind of passing the torch onto hip-hop and alternative.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting, kind of a melding point.
Right. And especially a lot of music by Black artists at that time was kind of more like post-disco, where it had like elements of disco, but kind of more in the 80s flavor, you know. And this is, of course, after Thriller too, you know. Thriller kind of like set a different standard for R&B and pop at the time. So I think a lot of artists were trying to kind of chase that type of sound and success. And speaking of, you know, artists who have come in and Tina Turner put out a big record this year with What's Love Got to Do with It and Private Dancer. Really a comeback record for Tina Turner in a huge way. Gave her a lot of additional resurgence that she really, I mean, obviously she was a huge star in like the 60s and early 70s. But like she was kind of on the way out too until basically this record came out. And then of course she did Thunderdome, which is not the greatest movie of all time by any means, but hey, you know, it brought her back into resurgence. And continuing with ballads, you have Chaka Khan with the I Feel For You record, which the single I Feel For You, obviously originally by Prince, but was passed on to Chaka to do, and she made it a huge hit. But Through the Fire is the big one I want to talk about on this, because I think that as far as ballads are concerned,
Through the Fire is good.
This is a good ballad. It's, and oddly enough, produced by David Foster too.
That battle of the ballads, and Foster's at the forefront.
Yeah, because I mean, we talked about how Chicago had You're the Inspiration that came out the same year. And we've talked numerous times about somewhat of a disdain for the Foster era Chicago. But I do think Through the Fire is a gem. And once again, it all goes back to Kanye. His biggest, you know, one of his biggest early singles, Through the Wire, sampled this. And then last but not least, Hall & Oates put out a record. Out of Touch, once again, a banger.
Oh, dude. It's not one of their biggest songs, but I love Out of Touch. Such a good song.
Yeah, I do too. Many people got introduced to that through GTA. I think I was familiar with it a little bit before then. Actually, Method of Modern Love is actually not bad either. That's more of a deep cut, but also pretty good. And that actually kind of leads into a good segue of rock and specifically hair metal. Elton put out a huge record this year. Sad Songs Say So Much is actually, once again, kind of a case like you just said, where not exactly one of the biggest Elton songs, but still really good. I like the bluesy, almost Rolling Stones type sound to this record. It almost reminds me of like Tumbling Dice or something like that.
You know, Elton has he's always had a way with songwriting. And even though we can all agree, I think we can all agree that 70s Elton is king. 80s Elton was pretty good because, you know, piano fronted artist and taking on more electric stuff. I think he's really, the 80s suited his sound very well.
Yeah. And because he was kind of a visual artist too, it lent well to music videos.
That's very true. He's also a bit of an operatic singer.
Yeah, he can be. But I think at this point, it was interesting because I think in this time, he was starting to sing like lower in his range. He wasn't singing as high as he used to.
Agreed. Right. And I think, in my opinion, his baritone is his most operatic, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Because especially once he kind of got to like the later half of the 80s and especially through the 90s with like, you know, the Lion King type of stuff.
King. That is a king ballad. It's so good.
Yeah, he really showed off a lot of that. Stevie Ray Vaughan put out a record as well. Stevie Ray Vaughan, one of the best guitarists to ever live, put out his rendition of Hendrix's Little Wing on this album. There's not much to say about Stevie Ray Vaughan that hasn't been said already. Like I said, hugely influential.
Did he pass away in the 90s or the 80s?
I think it was the 90s. I think he made it to the 90s. And then I think he died, wasn't it like in a crash or something? It was like a...
That's what I heard.
It was like a plane crash, I think.
I thought it was a car crash, but maybe it was a plane crash.
It could have been. I mean, there's a lot of musicians who have died, unfortunately, in plane crashes. So it wouldn't be too surprising. But still, not really much to cover here other than just, like I said, one of the most influential players. His stuff is definitely worth checking out. One of my favorites, I don't think it's on this album. I think it's more in the 90s. I think one of his instrumental tracks is called Riviera Paradise or something. And that's a really nice guitar track. Don Henley with The Boys of Summer, huge single, big song for Don Henley, especially after departing from the Eagles, who had an incredible run in the 70s. That was the thing about the Eagles that we talked about even on the last episode, was that pretty much all of them could sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the band broke up, most of them had a relatively easy time as far as solo careers. And I think Henley's was probably one of the bigger ones, between like Boys of Summer and like Heart of the Matter. And
now, while it's a really, really good song, okay, I do like Boys of Summer, but it's so Springsteen-y. Like,
oh, sure.
It's just...
Well, sure.
And, my brain sometimes like amateurly mixes them up. I know it's Dawn, you know? I mean, it's definitely Dawn's singing style. It's just sometimes I'm like, wow, it just sounds like Americana and Springsteen, which is, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just one of those, this is one of the most 80s sounding songs of the decade.
Well, sure. And that makes sense because Born in the USA was huge the same year. And the other thing too, fun fact, actually this Boys of Summer was not originally intended for Don Henley. It was originally intended for Tom Petty. And Tom Petty, I think, I think Tom Petty may have wrote it or had a hand in writing it. And then for whatever reason decided not to go with it. But originally I think it was supposed to be a Tom Petty song.
Wow.
That then got passed over to Don Henley.
And then he put it on Building the Perfect Beast. That makes sense.
Yeah. Which it worked. It worked well for Don Henley because Don and Tom have a kind of similar style in terms of the Americana influence. I mean, I think that Petty kind of does it a little bit better personally.
I agree. He's more consistent.
Yeah, just from the songwriting and especially the stuff that Tom Petty did with Jeff Lynne of ELO, you know, like Free Fallin' and Running Down a Dream and the Blue Moon Fever record, which is great. Speaking of more 80s ballads, REO Speedwagon with Can't Fight This Feeling.
Wheels Are Turning.
I mean, you know the song, basically. I mean, you know what REO Speedwagon was about. We don't really have to talk too much about this one, I think.
Wheels Are Turning, it's a pretty respectable album, but it doesn't have, I mean, Can't Fight This Feeling is a monster track. There's really not much, in my opinion, on this record. I'm not saying that there aren't good tracks. It's just kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a release.
Yeah. While there are some other great ones that came out in this one, there's a couple of records I want to touch on before segueing out into the alternative space.
Woo!
So the Scorpions record is definitely worth mentioning. Big City Nights and Rock You Like a Hurricane, both huge tracks. Scorpions definitely, I think, were amongst the better hair metal bands of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Production and songwriting.
They're German, right?
Yes. And the funny thing is, I've heard people who have actually gone to Scorpions shows like now because they have still like been touring, and they said that they sound really good, like just as good as they did in the 80s, which is incredible because most bands at that time, like, you know, can't, you know, hit the things to save their lives. So
now Scorpions actually have a lot of really good other tracks. They're one of those bands that has like that one big hit that you know about, but they actually have a lot of really good songs underneath. And in my opinion, kind of like you were hinting, I think they're one of the better hair metal bands of the era. They have some good songs. They're not all like boring, in my opinion. They're pretty interesting.
Yeah, they're very, at least from the songs that I've heard, they're very hooky. Most of them have really like good hook. And then, you know, the verses are still pretty good too, but mostly they knew how to write kind of a big anthemic hook that would work well in stadiums. And speaking of anthemic songs that work well in stadiums, Twisted Sister with Stay Hungry. We're Not Gonna Take It and I Wanna Rock. I mean, wow, these are both, you know, two of the biggest songs of like the 80s and arguably two of the biggest rock songs of all time.
And can we say two of the best music videos of all time?
Yeah. And it was interesting, of course, with Dee Snider, also the singer, testifying before Congress, because, you know, this was the time where Congress was trying to censor a lot of music and whatnot. And he was testifying in Congress basically about, you know, keeping music, you know, more or less like uncensored. But then, of course, they developed the parental advisory sticker.
Oh, yeah. Around that area.
Yeah.
Same for hip hop. Yeah. Hip hop had that, right?
Yeah, hip hop, but then it actually, the inception of it really came from the Prince record because I think Al Gore's wife, Tipper Gore's daughter, bought Purple Rain. And then, of course, they got to the song Darling Nikki, which has a lot of very
suggestive themes. We'll just say that.
Yes. And then she was very upset and then caused this whole uproar about different forms of censorship. That, as well as like Quiet Riot, I think that album too was kind of big in that.
We went from Purple Rain to Chocolate Rain real fast.
Yeah. And then the last one I really want to mention is the Survivor record, Vital Signs. Survivor is one of those bands where, once again, you know the big single, which is Eye of the Tiger. But I think that it's, as we were saying even before we started recording, they're one of those bands where I think there's a lot more to it than just that. I Can't Hold Back is actually a pretty respectable single. On one of their other albums, I think they have a single called like, is it Love That I'm Feeling or something like that? So definitely one of those bands as well, where a lot more than just Eye of the Tiger, and one of the better like true hair metal bands of the era too, in terms of just the musicianship, the songwriting. Them, I think, kind of along with like Scorpions, as we mentioned, and Def Leppard, I think, was kind of one of the better hair metals too.
I've never really been a hair metal guy. I think you could tell, but I do have my exceptions. On this list, Rat is one of them. Well, I'm not crazy about Rat, but Out of the Cellars, you know, it's a notable album, has Round and Round. I do like that track.
Uh-huh.
Whitesnake, which is pretty graphically titled Blink It In, but there you go, because you know, sure, they're important, just like Poison.
Yeah.
But kind of going back at the more classic rock era, Rush released something, Grace Under Pressure. This is when they were still kind of entertaining the more new wave Police sound.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's not really a big album. I mean, Distant Early Warning, Red Sector A, those are some decent Rush tracks. They're just not going to win any awards. It might be kind of a nice pick for those really niche Rush fans. Like, you know, it's like an edgy pick, I guess you could say.
Sure.
It's not as good as Signals, though.
Right.
Bon Jovi with Bon Jovi, and then Runaway, that's the lead single there. Three of a Perfect Pair by King Crimson. I kind of like the opener, Three of a Perfect Pair, the actual self-titled. So it's kind of math rocky. I don't know if you've listened to this album, but it's kind of cool. And what I like about King Crimson is their way that they could kind of evolve and change throughout the times.
Yeah.
And I think King Crimson have done really good jobs reinventing themselves each year. So I think it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Purple released something, Perfect Strangers, with, again, you know, a very provocative lead single, but I won't say it.
Sure.
Dio with The Last Line, not as big as their 83 record, but still important, with Last in Line and We Rock.
Sure.
And then Judas Priest had Defenders of the Faith with The Sentinel as the lead single. And I think that pretty much covers it up before the alternative. Did you want to lead into NXS?
Yeah, sure. NXS, once again, a hugely influential alternative, new wave, almost kind of very dance punky in a big way, before even a lot of the dance punk stuff really happened. Original Sin being the big lead-off single off this one.
It's kind of glitch pop.
Yeah, I would say glitch pop, but there definitely, I think, has been some kind of dance punk elements, as well as a lot of new wave stuff too, because Dua Lipa, I think, kind of bit off of an NXS record pretty hard.
Oh, definitely bit off of them.
Yeah. Speaking of more of that kind of new wave pop type of sound, electronic, Depeche Mode put out a record as well with Some Great Reward. Like I said, this is kind of the early Depeche Mode, so I don't think this is really them at their best. I think that Violator is them at their best, which was more towards like 1990. Although they did have some big songs in the 80s, they had, you know, Just Can't Get Enough and whatnot. And, you know, those are good songs, but I preferred, I think, the later forms of Depeche Mode over the 80s Depeche Mode, mostly just because I felt like 80s Depeche Mode kind of sounded a lot like a lot of what was going on at that time. And I think that with Violator, they kind of really established themselves in a different direction. And that's a hugely influential record too for many people. The Cocteau Twins with Treasure, this is definitely one worth mentioning, especially for fans of dream pop and shoegaze. This band is just, like I said, incredibly influential as well.
Now, it's not as big as their 1990 record. It's very ethereal. It's like Slow Dive, My Bloody Valentine, The Sundays, Beach House. There's a little bit of Tegan and Sarah in there. And there's also a lot of what Purity Ring would do as well in the 2010s. So I don't think Treasure is necessarily their best album, but it's kind of like one of those albums that you would listen to inspire you to make really good music.
Yeah, absolutely. So continuing the new wave trend, The Cure put out a record with the Top. I'm not as familiar with the 80s, like this period of 80s Cure. I'm more familiar with them from, to be honest, from their singles. I'm more familiar with them through like the, you know, Boys Don't Cry, Friday I'm in Love type of stuff.
So I had the pleasure of being able to listen through their whole discography at one point. I don't know if it was like years ago, but this is their fifth studio installment.
Yeah.
This is when I forgot his last name, but the drummer, he backs off of drums. They bring in a new drummer, and then Robert's basically playing most of the instruments anyway. So I think Lowell, the previous drummer, is now on keyboard, but they brought a new drummer, and then Robert's playing the other instruments. This one's more new wave and more abstract than their other records. It's kind of weird. I mean, like, you have titles like Banana Fishbones, very weirdly named tracks, but The Caterpillar is the lead single. And some of the favorites I like, which are not really that interesting to most people, but they're quirky, like Bird Mad Girl. I actually, this is probably my favorite track on it. Dressing Up is really good. And then The Top. So I kind of like The Top. I think this was one of Jeff's least favorite albums. But then I was like, oh, dude, Bird Mad Girl is pretty cool. It's weird. Like all of these titles are, I don't know what was going on with Robert. And again, it's not the biggest. What's the one, Fire in Cairo?
That sounds correct. I'm not the biggest.
Oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's not like that, but The Top is pretty cool. We kind of joke that The Top is their bottom because it wasn't the best, but I think it's pretty good. So I think people should listen to The Top. It's definitely another edgy pick for a band.
Right. And once again, we have a really nice segue of new wave at this time with the Pretenders record, which has more of the Smiths jangle pop type of sound. 2000 Miles was the big single off of this.
I like Back on a Chain Gang and Show Me. 2000 Miles, not big on it, but it's probably the biggest track on this record. And kind of like you're saying about the Smiths and the jangle pop, they did have Johnny Marr play with them live, I think, in the latter 80s. But it kind of goes to show how much they're a little bit kind of like a sister band to the Smiths, but also kind of like Talking Heads. You can hear that sound as well.
So maybe it's kind of like a Talking Heads Tom Tom Club type of dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, because the Tom Tom Club was obviously, you know, Tina Weyworth's and Jerry's, the drummer, they started that group adjacent to the Talking Heads. And even in like Stop Making Sense, which came out in this year too, they had, you know, Tom Tom Club songs being played at Talking Heads concerts. Mostly just Genius of Love, like that was kind of like the biggest one. One of, like I said, the most sampled songs of all time. So maybe it's just that kind of dynamic where it's like an adjacent band, but not exactly an extension of the band.
Definitely not. Oh, the Bangles All Over the Place is also kind of jangly. Going down to Liverpool, Hero Takes a Fall.
Yeah. When I saw that there was the Pretenders on this, it was kind of late last night, and I thought that was the Proclaimers, which was the... the band that did I'm Gonna Walk 500 Miles. And I was about ready to be like, oh, you know, more of that kind of Europe rock stuff. But then I realized it was the Pretenders and I was like, oh, wait, never mind. That's a totally different band.
Back to the Pretenders. I believe Learning to Crawl was more important in America than their other records. So this was kind of one of their more recognizable cuts. But yes, I know we can go to All Over the Place by the Bangles.
Yeah. As you kind of said, jangly, jangle pop, like, I mean, kind of started a little bit of an inception, it seems like here, and then got really big in like the early 90s with the next band I'm going to mention, REM. REM really brought the jangle pop into more of the 90s with the with like Losing My Religion and whatnot.
I think this is their second record, The Reckoning or Reckoning.
Yes. And this is when they were still more of like kind of like, I would say they were like truly alternative at this time.
Agreed.
More in the 90s is when they kind of got like mainstream alternative, where a lot of people like were very well aware. REM, kind of one of the more experimental bands, especially if you look outside of their big singles. Definitely more experimental. I mean, they were kind of, they were touted as being like college rock's or college's favorite band.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very good title.
Yeah.
So Reckoning, their second release with So Central Rain. It's one of those things where it's a very favorable album, but it's not one of their commercial cuts. It's almost like Bleach, you know, there's a lot of respect for it, but it's not that big.
Right.
But you can even hear a little bit of Pixies' Doolittle from 1989 in this. You can hear a lot of Pixies in REM, and especially in Reckoning.
Yeah.
So Let It Be, The Replacements with Androgynous, and then I Will Dare, which has a bit of a rockabilly vibe. And then Zen Arcade with Husker Du, or reverse that, Husker Du with Zen Arcade. This one is kind of getting more into the noise rock, the noise punk kind of area. Mm-hmm. You clearly hear Nirvana, but you also hear contemporaries Scream, which I think they're from DC.
Yeah.
You hear Scream, you hear a little bit of Bad Brains. It's kind of the more hardcore, but it's still pretty poppy. It's not so hardcore. Now they're pretty well known because of bands like Nirvana.
Yeah.
But they were definitely one of those like record store favorites for most people, and they didn't get gigantic acclaim.
Got it.
So a really respectable punk outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know much about Meat Puppets?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you've listened to Nirvana's Live in 1994. So this is Meat Puppets 2. That's the name of the record. Plateau, Lake of Fire, Aurora Borealis, and Oh Me. You're now getting into the Pavement sound of alternative. You're starting to hear more emo elements in these bands. Nirvana made Meat Puppets, in my opinion, more famous because of their live. I think those are the reasons why those singles are so big now. Double Nickels on a Dime. Okay, first off, Minutemen. This album has 43 tracks, so it's one of the largest albums of all time. There are albums with more songs, but this is probably one of the more like, I wouldn't say mainstream, but if we're going to talk about like numbers and tracks, it's probably one of the most popular albums. But in the ocean of albums in mainstream and just pop and just music period, Double Nickels on a Dime is kind of one of those like influential albums for the bands that we know. So in it, there's dance punk, you hear emo, there's folk, there's a slacker rock sound. And this album, you can tell, is pretty inspired by Gang of Four, you know, Entertainment, and then Fugazi, Public Image Limited, Block Party, Nirvana, Pavement, Weezer, Modest Mouse / Isaac Brock, and Pixies. So there's like a lot going on in this record. Vietnam is your more Block Party, Gang of Four track, but Block Party would come in like 2005, so that's much later. But this album's pretty emo-y. Also touching back on something much like the Smiths, Talking Heads, and the Pretenders, more in your new wave, groovy, art pop, funk, rock kind of territory. You have Orange Juice with The Orange Juice. This is their third and final studio album following their previous albums, You Can't Hide Your Love Forever and Rip It Up, both from 82. And then this last one, the Red Hot Chili Peppers with their self-titled and debut. Have you listened to this one?
Not as much, no. Although I think I'm familiar with some of the singles like Out in L.A. and Get Up and Jump. I think I have heard those on like radio from time to time. I know that this is when the Chili's kind of had a revolving door of members for a while. Cause obviously I think Anthony's been with the band forever. I think Flea has been with the band for a while. But then Frusciante and Chad came in later. I think this was pre Frusciante and Chad Smith, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but you still got your Flea. So Flea's obviously, I mean, he's pretty big on this record. It's not, again, this is not an album that's going to win records. It's really not, I don't really find it being a fan favorite either. I think it'd be a very, very, very edgy take. this was a fan's favorite, in my opinion. Out in LA, Get Up and Jump, I kind of like both of those tracks. I know True Men Don't Kill Coyotes is another track. It's not as much of my favorite or as much of a favorite as the previous two I just mentioned. But the whole album, though, I'm not going to lie, it's not, I don't think it's really that great. I think it just has some, you know, a few cool tracks.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, there's a little bit of beastiness to it, Beast Boys-ness to it in the guitar playing, but then you got like the funk bass playing. So it's kind of like a mishmash of stuff, this album.
Mm-hmm.
And you can definitely tell it's kind of awkward and they're still kind of figuring things out. It's not, It's definitely not a heavy hitter. It's amazing how much Blood Sugar would be such a large deviation. And I know Mother's Milk was to a degree, but
yeah,
Blood Sugar was for sure a deviation from their self-titled debut sound.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing to mention real quick about the Minutemen, I'm not sure if you know this, but the lead single Corona is the theme song for Jack Yeehaw. And that's an interesting little tidbit just to keep it family friendly.
Yeah.
So that's just a nice little tidbit of trivia. But that's going to conclude it for the 80s. I'm sure if we deep dove even further, we could probably find even more stuff. But I mean, those are really, I think, kind of the big records to know. And 94 is once again going to be incredibly stacked on the record front. I mean, this is really interesting because to have Grace by Jeff Buckley and Illmatic come out in the same year is insane.
True.
To have both of those records be out in the same year is wild. I'm really looking forward to 94. You have Weezer's Blue Album, the debut. You have Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G. You have Dookie by Green Day, which is...
Yeah, that's a pretty big one.
Which is, you know, arguably their best. And it was like their first album. Dummy by Portishead, definitely more in like the trip hop direction. Oasis, I mean, Alice in Chains. I mean, there's just going to be a lot to cover here in terms of 94. I mean, honestly, I feel like it's one of those things where we have to split that in two, just because we could spend an entire episode talking just about like the Blue Album, Grace, and Illmatic.
Oh, Super Unknown as well, huh?
Yeah, with Soundgarden, exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, also Nine Inch Nails put out a big record at this time too.
Downward Spiral.
Yeah, which some of these ended up actually on Apple's list. Some of them didn't, most notably Grace, which a lot of people are upset about. But this has been the Worktape Podcast. Money Mitchell, Isaac Rubin Barber. Stay hydrated, be good to one another, and see you next time. Peace.
Be back for 94. Peace.